Welcoming Salt Lake City herself, I stand-up comedian Eileen Dobbins, here with sister Erin Dobbins, a self-appointed film critic, from also from Salt Lake. Here
Thanks,
I am.
Man. Excited to be here.
Likewise, progressive texting myself here. So it's, you know, I've seen Erin in some of the other Mystery Science Theater influence podcasts, and we just somehow we're just conversing. I was all for new collaborations and everything, and we picked a topic of theater adaptations and stage plays, and you sent me the list, and I was like, whoa. was like, this is key stuff. This is like just so many different movies and shows. This is like, yeah, that's cool.
I think that's a good point, Cam. As we were researching, of course, films that we're familiar with that have meant something to us and stories that we've connected with, even I was surprised at just the sheer volume of films that have been adapted from plays, and obviously some of them being more successful than others. But we're very excited to talk about some of these stories that have impacted us, at least I know I am. And just really excited to be here on the podcast and share some of that with your audience.
Yeah, I'm really excited as well. And it's cool, like going through this exercise, it's funny how the stories that we liked, other people must have liked a lot because they were done not just once in film, but many of them several times. We noticed like the same stage play. So it's kind of fun because in going through, we were able to find like a good example and then sometimes a less good example of an adaption.
I think we can say bad example. I think we can admit
I didn't want to offend anyone involved in the 1938 Gary Cooper production or was it 38 or
33 or whatever. same difference. Yeah. One film that I think really stands out to me, and I guess a theme amongst these films that stands out to me, is often you would have your stage play and then frequently it would be adapted into like a musical later on. And one that I, of course, love is Pygmalion. Mm. And just, yeah, the journey of Pygmalion, right? Where, of course, you have a successful stage play and then a pretty successful film adaptation. And then, of course, My Fair Lady coming in, and you know, 1964. I think of stories like that, and I noticed there were several Eileen and I thought of as we were thinking of some of our favorite films that have that in common, where the stage play was great, maybe there was a film, and then later there was even a musical. But that's one that really stands out to me as something that's obviously been, like Eileen said, successful enough that it's been a repeat story and a film that's been done and done and done again.
1,000%.
Which is your favorite version, Erin, of Pygmalion / My Fair Lady / what, you know, which one do you like best?
That's a great question. I think I do really love that 1938 version with Leslie Howard. I feel like as far as adaptations go, you really maintained, like they really retained the dialogue and the integrity of the story in its play form. Mm-hmm. Of course, with Leslie Howard being kind of that dramatic, more dramatic roles, you know, he's in other films like Gone with the Wind and in these more heavy dramatic roles. So it's nice to see him in a more comedic capacity.
Kind of embraced soap operas kind of.
Yes. Yeah, kind of the melodrama, and seeing him in this more comedic role, I think, is really interesting and different from a lot of his other work. So I would say that adaptation was probably my favorite, although I must say the dialogue between Pygmalion and My Fair Lady is almost verbatim the same. So it's not like they did a lot to change the actual story or dialogue. They just added all of this fantastic music to My Fair Lady, which is really cool.
Well, Shaw is such a fantastic wit. You know, so the dialogue is great, but my favorite version is the least true version to the original. I like She's All That from 1999. Because I think it's one of the more inventive and well updated. Like, what a great mm-hmm. job of taking in a classic story and updating it to that time. It's a wonderful little time capsule of 1999.
No, that's true. That's true. Of course, you have like Freddie Prinze Jr. And who doesn't love Freddie Prinze Jr., especially in 1999?
Dear. I'm pretty sure no one liked him working on Wing Commander, but that's a whole different story. But I know what you mean. I get it. He was a 90s kid. There's a lot of these 90s where they were actually able to actually kind of promote these kinds of productions.
Yeah, a lot of classic adaptions in the 90s of like literature, like Clueless. That was a Jane Austen, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. Emma? Yeah, Emma.
Yep, they did Emma. I feel like they also revisited Pride and Prejudice. They were doing a lot of revisiting of those like Regency and historic kind of period pieces in the 90s.
10 Things I Hate About You, which is on my list later, actually, because I don't know if that's a good transition into our next story or not. But
oh, it pretty much is. No, it's,
yeah. It's fine. It's we're done with Pygmalion, right?
The taming of the podcast. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Yeah, get tamed podcast. The Taming of the Shrew. Obviously, you don't get much more classic than Shakespeare in English, right? Mm. Done many, many times. We've all seen Shakespeare in the Park, right? That's a famous Shakespeare in the Park one. So to see it turned into a musical for the stage is just what a fantastic idea. I like the musical version better than the Shakespeare version because there's some, the woman, there's some dynamics in the Taming of the Shrew that are just kind of like, they haven't worn well, maybe in the last.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always unfortunately going to be, especially if they're doing a kingdom set kind of period, there's going to be some guys like, very self-centered or just, you know, taking advantage of people or even just abusing his privilege. And you go, wow, what different standards we had in those different days. Absolutely. But yeah.
Very true.
Have you guys...
The musical makes it more lighthearted. Something about putting the music in there just makes palatable. It more fun. Yeah.
Totally palatable. Have you guys, by any chance, seen the Sunset Limited? That was one of my picks.
No.
It's this Cormac McCarthy is a like it or hate it, but yeah, it was a single location stage play, two guys trying to get over their just complete character differences, various biases, just directed, adapted, and co-starring Tommy Lee Jones. He co-stars against Sam Jackson and it premiered on HBO. It's 2011, really engrossing. And like many of these plays, we can get trivial on whether or not, you know, they're just filming a play versus properly adapting it, but I still, it is very engaging, and from that alone, I think most viewers will be able to tune into it.
Do you have like a favorite scene, Cam, or like something that really stands out to you about the story?
It's really hard because like it's literally one giant long scene.
Oh wow.
A better one might be David Mamet adapting his own play, Oleana, which stars William H. Macy and Deborah Eisenstadt. And much like Hitchcock's Rope, you get these two people just arguing for the one single room the entire time. You can probably find it on Stars. It comes on there every once in a while, but it is really magnetic dialogue. It's just a student. Literally just angry at her professor, and she's like, why the hell did you fail me? And it just like they insist, like they sort out the differences and everything, and it's just so interesting how they were able to make this just so enlightening. You don't really like either person, but you understand them, like typical Mamet style. So
I love that. It's amazing to me what can be done sometimes with just like a single room set.
Yeah.
As long as they have the right dialogue and the right story. Yeah.
Walk in, where does the whole scene like begin? Where does it end? How does it even work? You know, is it one well-oiled factory or is it?
Yeah. They really have to rely on like the use of props too and be like really strategic, I think, with props. So it's always interesting, I think, to see an adaptation like that. Yeah, because it's really dependent on the acting at that point.
You can't forget where you are in the scene. You can't
get
away from it. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. I feel like, of course, along a similar vein with like dialogue and the setting of the story, you have films and stories like The Man Who Came to Dinner, which of course,
oh my God.
Like there's a man, is he injured? We don't really know, but he's in this room basically for the whole story. And then all of these other characters are revolving around him.
Now, which version do you like? Do you like the Betty Davis version?
Oh yeah. I love the Betty Davis version. I just feel like Monty Woolley has one of those faces that is made for that part.
I gave this a 10.
Like, made to be this, like, thoroughly old man, right?
Yeah. You can find this on HBO Max for those who want to look at this one.
Yes.
Great Christmas movie. Like, when you get sick of all the other holiday movies and want to watch something that's actually entertaining, The Man Who Came to Dinner.
Jimmy Durante has trouble really playing anyone else besides Jimmy Durante, but yeah, other than that, it's a pretty cool cast. And like you say, very pleasant, kind of like White Christmas almost in a way. It's just like it's easy to kind of it. People who want an older movie will be able to get into it, while people who aren't as into those may still find cultural semblance in it. So, yeah, it's interesting how we have to introduce certain stuff and sometimes give a cliff notes to brace everyone.
But that's a really good point. It is kind of there are a lot of really witty dialogue exchanges, which I think keeps it upbeat and keeps it from getting at any point like sagging, if that makes sense.
Yes, yeah. And they're making every shot count, and
I love that.
Did you guys ever perform Greater Tuna or follow any revivals of that stage play?
No.
Okay, so this one's story is very loose. It's been performed. I think comedic actor Bill Irwin or Robin Williams might have done a version of it, but I've seen so many taped versions of this. I would love to see someone actually adapt it, but it's one of those, it's very difficult because it's two performers and they're playing an ensemble of like a dozen different characters, like giving each other enough time to transition and come out of their, you know, wardrobe department and with a new suit and a new persona ready to go. So
I love that sort of thing. It's like what you would picture Martin Short doing on Broadway.
Yes. Not a popular comedian like Eddie Murphy doing it. This is more like, just someone who literally had to, like, sometimes they have to go back to playing a character from a previous scene. So it's a great acting challenge while also being a very, just having the nuts and bolts of a typical play. Altogether, I mean, it was one of four different ones. The setting is actually Tuna, Texas. So it's a fictional town claiming to be the third smallest in the state. And it's, you know, people have noted how they're all eccentric and everything, but okay, so I take it back. Apparently there is a HBO production of this, but it's just so witty, just kind of like any version of Much Ado About Nothing, where you are just going on for the ride of your life. And even though sometimes the men are in drag and not giving the best female voices they could possibly attempt, it's still, the ambition is just to be admired.
I love that. I'm gonna come away with this with a nice watch list.
Right. I'm not going to give you anything that's like too pretentious or too silly. Oh, man.
You know, that's the thing about a stage play, right? Is it has to be witty. You just like, you can't get away with bad dialogue.
Right. And if it's not the best, just fess up. It doesn't all have to be 100% every time, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wait, I take that back. You can have bad dialogue if you have really good music. People no, don't.
There you go.
You know, like a lot of Broadway successes are like maybe not impressive on the dialogue, but the music comes through.
That's true. The right music can redeem a show at times.
But it doesn't redeem The Strawberry Blonde.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
So they yeah, so that the stage play, what is it, on a Sunday afternoon, or it happened on a Sunday afternoon? I always get it confused.
I think it's
what a
one
generic Sunday name. Afternoon. One Sunday afternoon. What a bad title, can I just say? That's a bad title. Because it's so unspecial. I can never remember it. But it's a wonderful play from the 30s, early 30s. And it was made then almost immediately into a...
Immediately. Like, no waiting.
No waiting. Into a film, but a really bad film.
Oh, so bad.
So bad.
It's not as bad as Baby Doll by Arthur Miller, is it? No?
Oh, yeah. But that's a different Maybe kind not. Of bad.
Maybe not. I mean, Gary Cooper is doing the least... in this, you know what I mean, like the least amount.
I always got a drift of him. He's a soldier first and an actor second. He can say him on time, but he never really becomes the character. But it was before, it was back when we were like, oh my god, lights, light, camera,
you know. Yeah, like he actually matters. Is Sergeant York and no one else.
There you go. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, it's just that it's not fun at all is the problem with that movie. It loses all of the fun of the original stage play, which is, you know, a lighthearted fable of, you know. Yeah, I think fable is how it's described.
I feel like it's also kind of like an homage to an earlier time, right? It's one of those period pieces that kind of emphasizes the romantic aspects of the turn of the century, which was a very popular thing to do in the 1930s. So I feel like it loses that magic when Gary Cooper's in it for some reason. It's just not an engaging story.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. we time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
But when they remade it again, only what?
8 years.
Maybe 8 years later?
Eight years later. Two presidents later. Well, actually, maybe not two presidents. Two presidential terms later.
Oh my God.
Very different results. Because they also changed the title, which I think helped, to The Strawberry Blonde, which is a way more engaging and descriptive title.
Right.
And then they put a song with it. The cast, amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing cast. You have James Cagney. Mm-hmm. You have Olivia de Havilland. You have Jack Carson. You have Rita Hayworth. I mean, great cast. And it was a night and day difference.
And you don't think of James Cagney for his comedies, but you really should. He's such a funny actor.
And at first I never understood it. I was like, wow, isn't he the guy who often plays, you know, a tough guy? And then people would often note he kind of, I don't think he would reinvent it, but just popularized the whole, you know, where do I walk in the scene? How do I stand? Mm-hmm. And it's like, and we all forget that we're often thinking about dialogue and everything. And yeah, kudos to him for really going to town. And he can actually sing pretty decent. Okay, not decent. He's solid, but he's not. He wouldn't be my top 20, but he is still pretty solid.
Yeah, that's a great point, Cam. That's a great point. It's the presence, right? It's like stage presence. It's like. Like you said, where is he in the scene? What is he doing in the scene? How is he commanding the scene? And you're so right. I feel like his body language really just really brings life to this character.
You guys have
watched it together. We rewatched The Strawberry Blonde and couldn't help notice like how Jimmy Cagney's like a little bulldog. Nah. Right? Like, I cannot think of a bulldog when I see him, right? Like, he's right. Like, gonna get over the fence and get in a scrap. He's just, I don't know, he's just really endearing, and the whole thing is really fun. And it's a good movie. And did you tell me it was one of Wes Anderson's favorite movies? Yeah, one of my favorite directors.
Yeah, so it's on HBO Max as of right now, and I believe there's an intro by Wes Anderson there, and he kind of dives into, again, just this like romanticization of the turn of the century and what makes The Strawberry Blonde different from some of the other stories, including location, because The Strawberry Blonde is set in New York City, whereas so many of those other stories and films are actually set in like Ohio and St. Louis and, you know,
these very specific big cities, trombones.
Yes. Yes. So it's a very different vibe from some of the other stories. And that once he connected that for me, my brain was like, oh yeah, no, that's true. This is a different story. These are people living in a very different climate. Like, you can't get more different than Ohio and New York City,
Kansas,
right?
And all these other places and all that. And yeah, it is wild.
But are you guys here? Go ahead. Well, I was just gonna say, my favorite thing about the whole Wednesday afternoon Strawberry Blonde storyline, though, is that so they make The Strawberry Blonde. It's a huge success because it's a really good movie. Everyone loves it, right? Including the director Raoul Walsh. He likes it so much that 7 years later he remakes his own movie.
That might have been the version movie. I saw, I think. Yeah.
With music, right? With Dennis Morgan singing, I think.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Yes. And it's interesting, like same director, you would think same result. No. Completely different result.
Not even with the exact same script, but with music added, it's a completely different vibe. And it's not as good.
Yeah, it is almost kind of like The Odd Couple. I do like the movie version, but prefer the sitcom cast. It is kind of a...
Wait, is there someone who prefers the sitcom cast to the movie cast of The Odd Couple? Cam, is it you? Is it?
I know many who, I mean, that Turner Classic movie, Ben Mekowitz even admitted. He's like, I prefer the... There's just something about their faces. This is more animated, but don't get me wrong. I like me some meth though, and
I'm a Robert Osborne girl. What can I say? I just can't get on the Mankiewicz bus.
There's a major producer. Yeah, that dude does not get enough credit. I take it you guys are Aaron Sorkin fans too.
I don't know Aaron Sorkin.
Okay,
but I'm adding this to my list.
Few Good Men, West Wing, and all that. They did a version of one of the popular West Wing episodes when COVID first hit. But yeah, A Few Good Men, that was a Broadway play before it became a movie. And apparently Lou Diamond Phillips played the Tom Cruise role in one version. So I was like, that's awesome. I wish someone could have taken that.
Amazing.
I knew Alec Baldwin was going to do like an NBC live TV version, but that's definitely not happening now. So, I wonder if he'd play the Nicholson character. Colonel Jessup. Fucked with the wrong Marine. Excuse my language.
Reasons why film adaptions are so important. Because, like, you think about, I see, like, the playbills sometimes for some of the original, when these plays were originally produced. And I think, wow, I would have loved to have seen this amazing actor in this role, and I never will, right? Because that's the nature of live theater. But it's so important that these great plays get adapted to stage, because even though in a lot of cases you can't quite capture the scale of the theater, or it's different, it's an apples and oranges thing, but it's like the only story way some people are going to ever know the story.
Yeah, totally. There are times where sometimes they do so good with the performances, it's like I still feel like I'm missing complete understanding of how these characters work and what have you. There are some Hallmark plays where you can often find someone like Glenn Close or a just Louis Gossett Jr. type adapting it. But I do applaud some of other Sidney Poitier's key roles. I applaud some of these other, I mean, you guys were mentioning some very key movies. Judy Garland, I think, has done a few. I mentioned Betty Davis earlier because who doesn't love her? But it's just amazing how they do the role too well to where it's just like, good luck standing out on Broadway. Everyone is so fascinated with the most popular version of it to date, you know?
That's such a good point.
So hard to stand out sometimes.
I've got a question for both of you.
Yes.
If you could travel back in time to see a stage version, you have like one ticket. You can't go back in time and do anything useful. You can't save anyone. You can't change anything. You only have a ticket to go back and see a play. What would it be like? Me, I'd want to see the original Peter Pan. Like, I would love to see that when it first,
you know,
it broke, like, it changed theater.
Actually be pretty cool because you have to use your imagination as opposed to see preset, you know, visual effects and where the actors stand against a green screen. Yeah, you wouldn't be distracted by anything else, and whether or not the filmmakers did their own style, you would be more fascinated with, just people playing pretend and making you trust that, you know, and casting definitely would be specific, just trying to find someone who can really make you believe they can fly or that they're a Captain Hook, you know.
Because you know that the original cast is special when the playwright helps to choose them, like, right? that's special. That's who they see as the character. So I feel like there's something cool whenever you can see an original cast.
I agree with that. I agree with that. That's a really good point. I feel like for me, it would be Arsenic and Old Lace because I just love that story. I think it's so funny and witty and entertaining. And I just imagine it being even more so on a stage with a live audience and everyone really, you know, getting into it and interacting with the content, I just feel like that would be a really special experience to just be able to, yeah, see it live. And with the original, like you said, the original cast, I can imagine that being even, because I do believe some of the cast members from the film were part of the original Broadway cast, if I'm not mistaken, at least one of the aunts in the film.
Nice.
So I feel like, you know, that would be a great experience, and that would
suck
be something
Disney. We got
I'd be interested.
That's great.
What about you, Cam?
Ah, oh, man, a proper. Yeah, this is what was real struggle. It's just you. You guys really brought a proper fantasy one. I can't think of many fantasy plays that I've seen. I definitely saw years ago a Treasure Island kind of local Cats Theater play. The people were good. I didn't care for the actual teachers or professors there, but man, what is a good stage play? I don't want to leave you guys hanging. We'll probably go with Cabaret.
Great choice. Wasn't that
Seasons too? But yeah, go ahead, sir.
Well, I was just going to say, was that Liza Minnelli's breakout role?
Definitely one of the first. There was...
she had a couple. She had is it the Sterile Cuckoo? Was that around the same time?
The Sterile Cuckoo. What a title.
You're right.
I'm not familiar with that one.
There was also Streetcar Named Desire. I mean, it's not pleasant, but it is a good one. But I know what you mean. It's... interesting how these plays are constantly readapted. There's always kind of like Death of a Salesman, some local production of it, and it's not even a special block anymore. Many people are just willing to go and readapt it.
Yeah, so there's true. Everyone's been in a production of Guys and Dolls, right? Isn't that
that's
and Annie.
True.
And Annie.
Yeah, there was I think, one with Angela Lansbury as the groundskeeper, I guess that was probably a better one. I know there's other versions of it from late 90s, early 2000s that be on the Wonderful World of Disney. We don't talk about the Jamie Foxx one. Oh my God, that's bad. Oh. Why do you do this, Jamie Foxx?
For the money.
If it's, you know, try anything once, maybe. Maybe it's one of those things where it's like, just gonna give it a shot, see what happens. But often it falls flat, right? Again, it's that SAG.
There you go. Okay. I guess closing thoughts on just which one of where we can find any of these. Anyone who doesn't have HBO Max or a library in your own.
If you don't mind renting some of them, Amazon has a surprisingly large catalog of older movies, I find.
Yeah.
But the library is a really great option. I'm glad
Canopy
you said it.
And this other app, I always forget the name of, are kind of the leading anchors where you can stream and read anything on their app. Mm. You just need a current library card.
Oh yeah, that's great.
And that's how they do what they do, but they I'm seeing so many people even taping recordings while watching it off of there. I'm like, seriously? They got everything and it's not even on disc yet. I'm like, that's wild. So if it's just a digital upload, they probably got it.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a great resource, like you said, especially for people who don't have a physical library location in their proximity. Yeah. That's a great resource.
You can't bust your wallet on every single project that you're watching and reviewing.
True. That's very true. But you'd be surprised. Sometimes Yeah, sometimes Amazon will have some of these like on their rotation of available content included with Prime. I know that's also dependent on your Prime status, but
I'm fine for it, baby.
I feel like there are some really great films out there. I think sometimes people are a little bit intimidated by classic film or, you know, some of these black and white films that might appear like they're going to be more dry or less interesting or not current or not relevant. And I would just encourage you to, you know, step outside your comfort zone and give some of these stories a shot, because more than likely, a more popular, more recent version of that story has been presented to you and you've liked that. So you might as well give the original a try or just experience some of the, you know, the earlier options. That way you'll also have something you can compare your experience to. And then you can be super opinionated like I am and, you know, have conversation points at parties and probably annoy people, but worth a try.
Who knows if it's a theater themed or even a TED Talk type hangout.
Every party is a TED Talk.
There you go.
It can be.
You guys ever have a assignment where you had to find a good TED Talk and analyze it? Why do you like this one? It was so hard for me because I was just like, well, I mean, I'm not the audience for what they're discussing, but is that or they're using their hands a little distractingly, but I can't do what they do. I don't really want to critique them. Right. But that was the assignment. It was like, find five good ones, find five you don't care for. And I was like, this is fun. Gives me an excuse to just watch more TED Talks.
Yeah, any excuse, right? I think that... you know, another thing too, I always have to remind myself to be, you know, because you mentioned like give the old version a chance. I have to remind myself to give the new version a chance too. Because sometimes, especially if I see a play first and then you see the, or at the same principle, if you read a book first, right? And then you see the film version, and I'm not always open to another interpretation of what I think the story is, right? Which there's beauty in retelling from different perspectives. It's not the same story. It's a different story, and that's okay. And sometimes I have to like let go and remind myself that. Worth seeing both because they are going to be different. So you might think that if you've seen a movie, you don't need to see the stage version, but I would just say give it a chance. You might be surprised. It's a completely different experience.
It might even help you be a better performer or critic or why you like what you like. Because I find that so many people have the time, they like a lot of things, but they don't know why, and they're not able to explain it. I'm like, don't leave yourself hanging. Be ready for that inevitable being put on the spot.
Right.
Improv, baby.
Exactly.
Split decision making. So what do you guys got coming up that we totally need to check you out? A front row film roast guest spot a few years back. Sorry, go ahead, Aida.
Well, I was just gonna say, I have if you're in Salt Lake, I have a show coming up next week.
Oh, sweet!
On the 28th at Waikiki downtown.
Man,
awesome.
Okay.
And just for the sake of the audience, April 28th at Waikiki, is that right?
Yeah, April 28th at Waikiki, I'll be joining a crowdsourced comedy
I don't think this will air in time.
Oh, well, you can think about what you missed. I want to instill FOMO, but after you've already missed out. And then follow me on social media and I'll just tell you when the next show is. So feel sad and then follow me on social media.
I'm feeling sad already. Man,
Eileen, how will people follow you? What is your handle? What's the best way?
Eileen Dobbins. I'm the only Eileen Dobbins on Instagram, I'm very proud to say.
I'll be sure to link it.
Eileen Jokes is my handle on Instagram, Twitter, etc.
Sweet.
And as for me, Cam, you never know where you might find me, but if you do find me on social media, you'll probably see some of my projects there. You can link mine, but I'm also, I also have a handle. It's Erin. No, that's not even right. It's golden.era.erin on Instagram. So you can find me that way and connect with me. And then, of course, any of my projects I will be sharing, and hope to connect with all of you. And who knows, maybe we can talk more about films and stage plays and
I'll get you on an audio drama.
Let's do a ham radio sometime, Cam.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Can you guess what's playing on here now? You guys rocked it. Right.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.